Brady Saar, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services, Erskine. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network, CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good morning, Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Don Wick with Randy Coonan in studio. We'll have reports from Sierra Doctor and Whitney Pittman, too. USDA is forecasting the biggest ever drop in net farm income. U.S. farm income is expected to total $141 billion this year, down $42 billion from last year. Farm income at the farm level is down 20% nationally, down 11% in the Northern Plains. Cash receipts for corn and soybeans both dropping 19%. Dairy farm income expected to decline over 80%.
The outlook for agricultural credit remains strong despite the modernization of the farm economy. A quarterly report from the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City said a growing number of lenders expect farm income and repayment rates to soften in the months ahead. Farm debt for production loans at commercial banks is up 7% from a year ago. Debt from farm real estate loans rose 5%.
West Central Ag Services hosted a plot tour near Manoman yesterday. West Central Ag Services' Ryan Liebel says the wheat crop was a pleasant surprise.
And I think beans will be close to the same, because when you go out and look in the fields, the nodes are only, you know, half inch apart, which is, you know, a lot more pods up, even though the beans aren't as tall as maybe they could have gotten had conditions been different early on. But in the same with the corn. The corn, you know, had its tough times, but a lot of, you go in fields and there's not much that's more than like an inch tip back. So there's still plenty of seed and everything out there on the cobs, and I think the corn is going to be really good. So it may not be last year's corn that we had, especially in this area right here, but I think the corn is going to be very good yet, and the beans are still going to surprise people.
The plot featured 33 varieties each of corn and soybeans. Liebel says dry conditions early on may have contributed to issues in the fields around it. They aren't seeing very much of it.
The double O's and stuff have turned. They're probably where it would be close to where you could debate combining them. And then it's up to, it's still real green when you get it to about the 0.3s to the 0.5s there. You know, as of last week, they had flowers even at the top of some of them. So had we got a little more rain, they still could have put more pods on. And in the corn, as of last week, it was already up to like 82, 83 day was fully dented. And, you know, we got a few, and there's some up to like 89 day that's pretty close to black layering even. We planted the corn on the 23rd of May, and the beans got planted the 30th. It's later, but we still have a good look at it. It was real dry early, so there's some tip back on the corn, which in a lot of the fields around doesn't really have it.
After 3 years with La Nina, the world is transitioning to an El Nino. North Dakota Agriculture Weather Network Director Darrell Richeson expects El Nino to be a quick burst over the winter months.
It's just going to be here this winter. And by next summer of 2024, highly unlikely that we'll see El Nino conditions. So it'll be neutral next summer. So it should be a, you know, a different year yet again, like every year is unique. So El Nino is generally just really contrary to sometimes I say popular myth. I just don't see the correlation in North America because El Ninos are more wintertime events. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they impact our winters in the United States, very definitely. But not so much the growing season. South America's growing season, of course, in the winter, our winter, and so it does down there.
A strong El Nino typically equates to a warmer and drier than normal winter in the Northern Plains. Richeson was the speaker at yesterday's Peterson Farm Seeds Field Day.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey will be on the stage at the Big Iron Farm Show next Thursday at 10:30.
My role at USDA is even different than your traditional forecaster. I am looking specifically at U.S. weather impacts on agriculture. So it's a very narrow, very specialized area of concern. We have four other meteorologists on staff. They cover other areas of the world, major production areas. I happen to be the one who covers U.S. And so that is something I've been doing since 1998 when I came over from the National Weather Service. So 25 years of monitoring agricultural weather for the United States.
We'll talk drought, floods, El Nino, La Nina, and get Rippey's winter outlook.
One of the things I've picked up in my time at USDA, and it's going on 24 years, is the U.S. Drought Monitor, a product that I helped develop back in the late 1990s. I've been on as a rotating author ever since. We've got 10 lead authors, and I continue to rotate through. So, yeah, Drought Monitor has been a big part of my USDA career, looking at the impacts of drought. Certainly we've seen some big ones in the Red River Valley, 2017, 2021 being the two most recent to go along with all the floods over the years. So yeah, there's never a dull moment with USDA and ag weather.
This is the Red River Farm Network.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. NDSU soybean plant pathologist Wade Webster spoke at the Peterson Farms Seed Field Day to bring awareness to soybean disease issues. Despite a dry year, Webster has seen some disease pressure.
Even though it's been a very dry year, we're finding quite a bit of white mold in different pockets that lined up well with different rainfall events. We've also seen a lot of brown stem rot show up, which looks very similar to sudden death syndrome, but it is quite distinct within that particular disease. And then we're also seeing quite a bit of Phytophthora root and stem rot show up this year too. And that being one particular disease which can infect through both the seedling disease or seedling stage all the way up to the full maturity stages. So these are the primary diseases which we're trying to just educate, get awareness out, make sure people are understanding of how to identify these in the field.
A disease not normally found in the Red River Valley is also showing up.
So charcoal rot is one of the interesting diseases that have been showing up. Historically, this has been more of a southern disease because it requires such high temperatures. But this particular year, through all of May and June, we had very warm conditions and very dry conditions, which was highly conducive for this pathogen actually infecting into the soybean plants. And we're starting to see it show up here at the end of the season since we've been a little water stressed here on the back half.
As mentioned, Peterson Farm Seed hosting their field day yesterday. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Whitney Pittman has more.
NDSU Extension plant pathologist Sam Markell, talk about SCN. What are some of the main indicators that growers should be testing and checking out their fields?
It's all over the southeast and the east central part of the state, and it's moving west. You know, lots of times we don't see a lot of SCN damage until you're taking a yield hit. So if you've got a spot when you're harvesting that's yielding low and you can't figure out what it is, or the beans just don't look that great, can't explain it, or like IDC that shows up in August, right? Those are all common ways that SCN is first found. And so sampling for that is really the best way to figure out if you got it or not.
And in a year like this, I know there's a lot of people that are talking about beans turning. I mean, that started here a week or even more ago with the heat and whatnot. Is that something that could maybe be impacted by SCN or pushed along a little bit faster?
Yeah, so SCN's a parasite on the roots, so it's going to water stress it out, and it can cause these beans to mature a little quicker. And there's a few other diseases that will do the same thing, but that is something as well that's important to know.
You mentioned here, too, how other diseases then can become a bigger problem when this is present.
Yeah, so SCN makes sudden death and brown stem rot much, much, much worse. And that's a consistent thing. So we've probably had brown stem rot in the state for quite a few years, but until SCN is in the soil and beating up those plants, you don't see much damage. And sudden death is just showing up for the first time in the last couple of years.
And that's possibly because SCN is becoming more prominent.
Yeah, SCN has a hand in the severity of these things. All these things can occur independently, but usually when you get SCN in the mix, they get a lot worse a lot faster.
What are some things people need to be looking for when they're doing seed selection, rotation management, that kind of thing?
You know, you need to sample for the pest, take the test, beat the pest, and then find a variety that's got genetic resistance. Rotate out. Don't grow soybeans on soybeans every year. And then there's some new seed treatments that they might want to consider.
Testing possibilities here in North Dakota?
Yeah, the North Dakota Soybean Council is supporting a testing program that makes it free for the growers. So all they need to do is go to the county extension offices, pick up some bags, sample, send it to the lab that the Soybean Council contracts with. There's no cost to them at all. And that data comes right back to them in the mail. It's a really slick program, and it will really help you make a decision for your farm in the future. You know, I always remind folks that getting into the field at this time of year, late August, early September, you can really see what's going on in the crop. And you can't manage any of these things right now, but it'll help inform your seed decisions that they're going to make very, very soon, right? And so if you know what's going on, you know what the problems are, you can get a variety that helps solve those problems. That makes you money in the future. So this year right now, it can really pay dividends later on.
All right. Well, that's Sam Markell joining us here on the Red River Farm Network.
North Dakota Senator John Hoeven hosting a Farm Bill Roundtable this morning in Mandan. Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Ducheneau and North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner Doug Goring will also be part of that program.
World food prices fell to a two-year low in August. The Food and Agriculture Organization Price Index tracks most of the globally traded food commodities. That index cited a drop in prices for dairy products, vegetable oils, meats, and cereals. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Good morning. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. A Minnesota federal judge has stayed an ongoing lawsuit to prevent Minnesota from adopting California's electric vehicle mandate. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Sierra Doctor has more.
Minnesota Soybean Growers Association Executive Director Joe Smentek says the lawsuit has EPA's zero emissions ruling with California at its root.
There's a couple questions that were brought up. You know, we're suing in federal court in Minnesota about something that really has the EPA at the base of it. So the first question was, is this even the right forum, or should we be suing the EPA in district court in Washington, D.C.? So there's a case out of Ohio that is answering that question that started before our lawsuit, where that same question is present. And there's a couple other cases. One primarily, the biggest one is the Texas, state of Texas versus EPA, that is ongoing right now, looking at if the EPA even has the type of authority to allow states to do these different plans.
Smentek says there's other ways to cut carbon efficiently in Minnesota.
Well, we don't have any problem with electric vehicles. You know, we know they're coming, but we just have an issue when there's conflicting laws like this. We definitely, obviously, have been huge supporters of biodiesel. We think there's a lot of room still to grow in the state. We only have a B20 mandate, and we've run up to hurdle after hurdle on getting higher blends, whether it's a fire code, whether it's underground storage tank permitting from PCA. We've got a lot of extra room to use our fuels that we grow here to cut carbon. So we're very disappointed in this action to promote one type of effort to cut carbon while ignoring the rest of them, especially the ones that we grow right here in Minnesota.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
The money farm owner Allison Thompson thinks the markets are waiting for next week's USDA report for direction. Thompson says growers should be aware of outside market forces.
A lot of outside stuff still worth watching here on the grains. You know, all the yields and potential production is definitely getting a lot of the attention, but some of this outside stuff definitely worth paying attention to and could definitely move our markets in unexpected ways here through harvest.
Thompson will be a part of the Red River Farm Network's Market Outlook Seminar Series next week at Big Iron. She's on the program Thursday, 1:30 at the Big Iron Farm Show. As we check markets as we speak, we're down 2¾ cents for Minneapolis wheat. The December contract at 7.72. Chicago wheat, December down 1.5. KC wheat down 3.25. Dease corn, 1.25 higher at 487.5. November soybeans in at 13.59.5. That's even money. The January contract is a fraction higher. As mentioned, Big Iron next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at the fairgrounds in West Fargo. We're there with the Red River Farm Network building with seminars going on each day. We're located on that way to Acme Tool Crib across from the food court. Make sure you come in and check out our entire schedule. And if you can't be there in person for all the seminars, you can go online to yourliveevent.com. We're streaming all of those programs. You'll be able to catch them online and follow on YouTube as well. Have yourself a great day. This is the Red River Farm Network.